Leadership File on Premier.
Welcome to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. Conversations that help change the way you lead. Many church leaders will face a time in their life when they have to check their vision and work out what to do next. It may be that their ministry has changed because of a change in the church, perhaps extreme growth or sharp decline. It may be that things have changed in the neighbourhood that the church is trying to reach. It may just be that the leader senses that God is encouraging them to take stock and look for a vision for the next stage of the journey. Well, I'm joined this week by Phil Stokes. Phil is the team leader at The Well, a church that he and his wife Judy planted in 1987. He's the chair of Southwark for Jesus, a frontier leader of 3DM and part of the national leadership of Pioneer. He reached a time when he felt the need to seek a fresh sense of where God was taking him and the local church he served. So welcome, Phil, to the Leadership File.
Hi, Andy. Good to be here.
Good to have you along. I mean, when you were at school, could you have imagined becoming a Christian leader? That's the first question.
Not quite at school, Andy. No, I think my experience of God was definitely sort of a gradual haunting, if you like, from my childhood onwards. But it took, I think, until my early teens, late teens, really, until I actually made a commitment to Christ. But it was through a strange combination of Narnia, Graham Kendrick, the mother of my girlfriend at the time, and a charismatic Anglican minister called Trevor Deering, some people may have heard of, but it was one of his meetings where I committed to Christ. But I do remember it being that in each of those things, it was almost like following the clues.
Right, okay. Yeah. So you can see the chain of events very clearly.
Yes. It was an exciting... When you look back, don't you, you see how God has guided you, even from your childhood. And I think for me, that sense of otherness, you know, certainly when Graham Kendrick came and sang at our assembly, and I just suddenly appreciated something, and it kind of, the songs evoked something from the Narnia stories, and everything sort of, one thing led to another. And I think when I found myself in a place where I was being presented with an opportunity to respond, I was fairly quick to respond. It was an emotional response. It just sprang up. I was in a meeting with my girlfriend at the time, and I burst into tears when this guy just called God's presence to come. I was very embarrassed because I'd been conned along by my mother's girlfriend just to tape record the meeting. And my girlfriend's mother, and she'd said, "Could you tape record the meeting? I've got this new thing called a tape recorder, and I'd like to record it." That's how long it was ago. No iPods back then. It was a very, very powerful moment. And that began a journey, really, that's led me, I guess, to where I am today.
Sure. I mean, you were late teens, you were presumably starting to think about work or study or whatever?
Yeah, I was working with my father. I'd failed at school. I think my family went through a meltdown. And so I'd got about 3 O-levels at school. You know, it just happened at all the wrong time for my educational studies. And so I ended up working in my father's business, cleaning vacuum cleaners. You know, it was a domestic appliance business. And I ended up in the back workshop in sanding down these things, wondering what on earth I was going to do with my life. I was passionate about music. I wanted to be a rock star. I think everybody does at 18, don't they? So, but when I became a Christian, what happened is that I was in a meeting with Clive Calver and Youth, and Graham used to lead these midweek meetings in Wolverhampton at the time. So I was in one of these meetings, and a chap came up to me and said, "I hear you play the lead guitar. Do you want to join our? We're forming a Christian band called Rock Salt," and it was a thrill to be able to join this band that was playing to schools and clubs and places. An evangelist would speak afterwards. And quite a number of people would become Christians. It was a great time during those early years in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. And at some point you came down to London, to The Well?
Yeah, well, we came down to North London to work in I was kind of hanging around with these evangelists a lot of the time. And what happened was a friend of mine heard about a job in a church in North London. And so we went for an interview. We really didn't think we were going to do that. We thought, no, we'll become evangelists. We'll join YFC. and do the YFC things. But we ended up becoming youth workers in this church in North London. And it was a real training ground. It was 3 years of learning the ropes, really, of what it looks like to do ministry, to do outreach, but also to look after people. And so the first year was a complete nightmare. We closed down all the youth groups. And then we started something which just seemed to have the right DNA, the right mix of team life, training, a little bit of, you know, life on life with people. And it just grew. There's loads of worship. And we ended up with 100 kids crammed into a little work shed at the back of the church. And it was a real learning time of looking and seeing, okay, worship, celebration, a little bit of teaching, and loads of discipleship with these youngsters. That was the formula that we begin to hit on, and God was really blessing it. It was like a mini revival.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. And you met Julie at some point, obviously.
Well, that was before that. Yeah, back in Wolverhampton days. I'm a child bridegroom. As I tease my wife, we met at 19. I was married at 20. So,
oh well,
she's a little older than me. And we've been in the journey quite a long way. It's been a great time.
So how would you describe the church that you are part of now, The Well?
The Well is a network of communities. It's a network family church. So I think at the heart of it is we've always been family, and there's a strong sense of it's family first. And so the DNA, I think, of new churches has often been that way. I think there's a strong relational theme that flows through a lot of the new churches, and in that respect we were no different. So a strong family flavor. June and I were mum and dad. In fact, we're the oldest. You know, our kids were very little when we planted the church, and they grew up with the church. So my oldest one is 30 now, so they have seen the whole thing right the way through from its early years. And I think that the lessons of being family, growing through the seasons, have really been the whole joy of being part of a church that lives as a family.
Mm. Mm. And the derivation of the name, obviously it's evocative of of a place for thirst to be quenched.
Well, we're based in Camberwell. Okay. And we're on Wells Way.
Okay. Oh, there we are.
When we came to the area, we did research. We kind of did a little bit of prayer walking and all the things that you do when you're starting to find out what's in the area. And the research just led us to that wonderful scripture where it says that that Jacob uncapped the wells that his father had dug and that the Philistines had filled in. And so we found that Camberwell is just rich with all these kind of blocked wells.
Okay.
And history. You know, the Salvation Army training colleges in Camberwell. The Jeffrey brothers did major missions on Camberwell Green. Loads of history once we started digging. And we just decided that we needed that God was saying, this is a place where you can, if you dig in, you'll see some real renewal of those visions and those things that people have sown in the past. Mm. We wanted to be connected to the past. So digging wells, we started off with a few students for 3 months called Well Diggers, and that became the foundation of a small group that grew from there.
Yeah. And church planting in those days, I guess, was a little bit of, potentially for evangelists, et cetera, maybe door-to-door, maybe open air, maybe community action. What were the kind of things you were involved in?
All of those things, really. I mean, you know, we do the praying, the prayer walking, things that's talked about a lot more now, which is discovering people of peace. What does it mean to find somebody who will open up the community for you? So if you can find that person, half your job is done. Rather than you thinking you've got to win every individual, that you find those people to invest in, to really spend the time investing in them, and they become the doorway through which you can reach the community that you're seeking to be a blessing to. And that simple strategy was around then. It was combined with open airs and other things which are not quite in vogue at the moment. But I think the combination of just one-to-one prayer research and some certain events, public events, in which you could gather people, and just tons of food, to be honest, Andy. You just ate. I can remember eating every five times a week, probably something special going on in terms of food. So did put a lot of weight on, actually. If it wasn't for the fact that we were working so hard, I think I'd have been very big.
They'll know we're Christians by our quiche, as someone said, you know. So what were you learning particularly along the way about running a church? And
well, I think for myself, it's an interesting journey, isn't it? I mean, I think when I hung out with evangelists, I always thought I was an evangelist. Mm. And when you plant a church, you have to learn to look after people. Mm-hmm. So I actually began to be known as the pastor. I had hair in those days, mm-hmm. believe it or not. I'm very shiny pate nowadays, but I had a ponytail. So people used to call me the pastor with the ponytail because I was the alter ego of Noel Richards. But, you know, I'm not sure which one was the better looking of us two, but We were mistaken. At least I was mistaken for him. I'm sure he was never mistaken for me. Right. But it was, you know, I think through the process of learning to be a pastor, then you begin to learn other skills. I had a season when I was traveling with a prophetic mentor, Ken McGreevy, some people will know of, and he taught me how to bring a prophetic word in season. So for a while I was beginning to think, oh, maybe I'm a prophet. You know, so you go through these various different scenes and seasons of ministry. And then I began to think, you know, if you're hanging around the likes of Roger Forster, you grow in a love of the word and the Bible. And we were learning how to be teachers as well. So I think in all of these areas, you begin to experiment, don't you, in terms of who you are, what you are. And that's led me to the season I'm in, which is to think really more in terms of what does it look like to be a builder at a broader level. And that's the season that I'm in at the moment. So what am I learning, I guess? Just still learning all the time. You know, the thrills of and the spills of what it looks like to be in all sorts of different aspects of ministry.
You're listening to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Phil Stokes. Phil is the team leader at The Well, a church in Camberwell. We'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Leadership File with me, Andy Peck. I'm joined this week by Phil Stokes. Phil is the team leader at The Well, a church that he and his wife, Julie, planted in 1987, based in Camberwell. We're talking particularly this week about the whole process of kind of adjusting your vision or getting a new vision for the next stage of the journey. Before the break, we were looking a little at Phil's story of how he came eventually to The Well and some of the things he was learning. So you reached a time, Phil, when you needed a fresh sense of vision. So how did you feel God leading you at that time?
I hit the usual midlife crisis, Andy. You know, I hit 50, and you have a moment when you get 50. I'm sure you know nothing about this. You're far too young to know this. But you're looking at the next 10, 20 years, and you're thinking, is this what I'm supposed to do? There's a big review that goes on. I remember having one of these conversations with God. I don't know if you've had these or know what I'm talking about, but I was saying to God, look, God, what is it that you want me to be doing for the next 20 years, 10 years, 20 years, however long I've got? And he said, well, what did you come here to do? I said, well, I came here to plant churches. And he said very clearly, get on with it then. And which threw me into complete dilemma because right. I think, church planting went through quite a surge through the late 80s and early 90s, but it lost its momentum for various reasons. And I think certainly the new churches went through a bit of a meltdown dilemma, identity process. What is going on? What are we called to do at this stage? And I think that was paralleling my journey, or I was paralleling the broader journey. Mm. And I guess in that process, I began to ask God, okay, well, what does church planting look like for this generation? Mm. What does it look like for 21st century post-modern Christians in Western Europe? And and I think there were three or four words that began to come to me. One of the key phrases that came to me was multipliable and sustainable. And that became a kind of watchword of how was I beginning to look at how I did church. How was it going to be multiplied and how was it going to be sustainable? And I think in those questions led us on a journey, and we began to look at what it looks like to have a fully rounded approach to discipleship, to help people to become missional in their lives, become intentional disciples, not just discipling people into good giving and regular attendance, but actually teaching people to be present in all their places where they are every day. And I guess good discipleship has become my passion. It really has. It's become the thing which it give me a soapbox. I'm on it, but it basically is that looking at how do you create fully 360 degree followers of Jesus, people who are looking at all the different angles in relation to what it is to follow him. And that journey led us to a relationship with 3DM. We discovered that they've been planting missional communities for 15 years and been doing a very good job of it up in Sheffield. And so we linked a little with them. It also led me to connect with Pioneer because they were just regrouping and being very focused on what it looks like to be missional again. And I guess those two relationships and the way in which God was leading us has taken us on a very exciting journey the last few years. So we've, from being a little family church of around 100, we've doubled in size in the last few years, and we've begun to experiment with very different ways of structuring our meetings and doing things in a way that's a little bit more flexible, creative.
Excellent. And I'm just wondering whether, you know, church planting is hard work. And, you know, you talked about that conversation with God. Was there a sense in which you thinking, actually, I need to move on to something else, and that's kind of what you're expecting God to say, or was that not the case?
Yeah, I mean, I contemplated all sorts of options, to be honest. I mean, I think you do. You look at and you say, wouldn't life be easier if?
Yes.
But I think you are what you are, and I think the history and the DNA of being passionate about a vision for seeing a church that is rising up and becoming fruitful in the basic commands that Jesus gave to us. Yeah. Go make disciples. Yeah. And for me, if I wasn't being paid to do this, I'd do it anyway. That's the thing. It's not, you can take I can't think of a parallel at the moment. You can take the evangelist of the church. You can't take the church. I don't know what it is. It's the wrong phrase. You know what I'm getting at there.
You're basically part of your DNA.
Basically, it's my DNA. Yeah. I'm a builder at heart and wanting to see people grow. Mm. And I think innovation and flexibility and relational theology are all the things that I'm very very passionate about, just seeing how we can be creative. We've got a very creative bunch in Camberwell, so we've never been too afraid to reinvent ourselves.
Okay. You mentioned 3DM, which may be unfamiliar to some listeners. How has their approach helped you without going into all the ins and outs? I realise it's quite a potentially complex question to ask, but What particularly have they done that's been a blessing?
I think 3DM are brilliant at helping people find a language and a framework for the vision that God's given them. I think that they give hooks and tools for people who are being intentional about this journey of mission and discipleship. And so what they have developed, I think, are tools to help leaders become effective leaders. Mm-hmm. And it's so often we think if we've got a vision that that's enough. You know, visionaries tend to think their vision is that's it. Mm. But it's not. And it's just the start of the journey. And for me, I think realizing that to build wisely takes language, it takes a framework, it needs tools. And they've developed, I think, excellent tools. 3DM have developed tools that can complement the journey of growing disciples in all sorts of contexts. So it's really not a one size fits all model. It's a tool, a biblical principles that help people to get to grips with the journey of missional discipleship, producing leaders that will produce leaders.
I've heard it said that the word discipleship can be a bit of a problem to people these days. I don't know if you found that in your church.
Yeah, well, I think it all comes with a reaction to the L word, isn't it? Leadership and discipleship, or, you know, I mean, we basically, one of the phrases we say to people is that we believe in low control but high accountability. That we nobody's going to tell anybody what you should be doing, but actually we aren't going to ask you what God's saying and what are you doing about it. And that's kind of one of the core little questions that we use for our discipleship. What is God saying to you? What is God really saying to you? And looking people in the eye and getting and to help people tease it out, because sometimes it's quite hard for people to know what God's saying. But once you start and give people a few little tools to say, okay, in your work life, in your home life, you know, is there something God might be saying to you about your work, your rest, once people start to identify the rhythms of life, that God is interested in those, then I think God begins to begin a process of transformation. And I've seen it happen over the last few years with a good number of our core folk, and it's been a tremendous journey.
Now, I was going to ask you about kind of generic lessons for those listening from what you picked up in terms of, you know, that period of... Because there'll be people listening who are exactly where you are, saying, God, what do you got next? I'm in a bit of a crossroads.
Mm. I think get out there and connect with people who are doing the same journey. That's what really helped me. I was very much... We'd been in London. London can just suck you in and swallow everything. And if you're not careful, you do think it's the centre of the universe. Sorry, folks, but it's not. It is a great place to be.
We have listeners throughout the country, so don't
worry.
Absolutely.
But it's wonderful. It's amazing what God is doing around the country. And I think if we just take the time to lift up our heads and connect with a few people on a national level, there are loads of wonderful things that are going on and resources that are available to us. And I think just never be afraid to be a learner again. I think what's happened is for me in the last few years, I've realized that being a disciple has taken me right back to the foundations. Not just learning how to make disciples, but being a disciple is a constant challenge for us in our lives. If we are really going to be those that make good disciples, we've got to be.
Take out your cross daily and follow Jesus.
Absolutely. Whatever that looks like.
Yeah.
And it's been I think it's been an adventure. We've just come back and just being part of the little learning community with 3DM, we had a great time learning about all sorts of things. But just hearing God and deciding what are we going to do in response to that. They did a little dragon's den at the end of it and said, if someone's got a good little scheme they want to present, then we've got £1,000 to give you. So we put in a crazy scheme for a bonfire party, and we won it. So we're going to be spending a lot of money on fireworks this coming month.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. It's kind of a prophetic prayer that God would release power and grace into our community. And so I think they liked our pitch, and so we're very excited about that one.
Wonderful. Excellent. Well, Phil, sadly time is pretty well defeated us. We've been fantastic to chat with you. Thank you for sharing something of your journey. And there'll be folk who are listening who are perhaps already starting those conversations with God about what has he got on their mind.
We are hosting conversations on what it looks like to be missional. So if anyone wants to connect with that, do let us know.
Good. How would they do that? What would be the...
Email me, Phil Jules, PHILJULES @AOL.com, and I'll put you on the mailing list.
Wonderful. There we go. Well, there's an offer I wasn't expecting. Fantastic. Thank you. So, Phil Jules, PHILJOULES.
JULES.
Sorry, JULES. Okay. @AOL.com. Wonderful. Well, it's been great to have your company, Phil. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you for tuning in this Sunday. Do join us next Sunday at 3:30. Of course, you can go to Premier's website and go and listen to archived versions of A Leadership File, and go to iTunes too if you want to go further back than the last month. And it would be great to have your interest and input on previous shows. People have been my guests who have been suggested by listeners just like you. So you can email me apec@cwr.org.uk. So I look forward to your company again next Sunday at 3:30.
You've been listening to The Leadership File on Premier. Andy Peck serves as a tutor at CWR, a Christian charity whose courses and publications aim to apply God's word to everyday life. Contact him via email apec@cwr.org.uk.